Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. In this episode, by the grace of God, we're joined by one of France's most prolific filmmakers, François Ozon, to talk about his new film. Plus, the hands of fate deal us Molos. I'm Jake Cunningham, and helping me uncover the truth this week, Ella Kemp.
Hello.
And sadly, not stranded on a Colombian mountaintop, Sam Howlett.
Hi. I made it out.
Yeah, you did. You got there in the end. You just had to tie a few empty plastic water bottles and throw yourself down a waterfall.
I did steal a kid's wellies, though.
Yeah, but he did make it to the podcast studio.
By the grace of God.
By the grace of God. See? So we will start by talking about By the Grace of God, Ella. So this is François Ozon's true life drama that tells the story of three men who come together to dismantle the code of silence around abuse cases within the Catholic Church. It's set in France and begins with Alexander, who lives in Lyon with his wife and children. He learns that the priest who abused him whilst he was in the Scouts was still working with children. And so he decides to take action and is joined by two other victims, and they band together to lift the burden of silence. And it's a really powerful film. It debuted at Berlin earlier in the year. And I think for me, this is actually one of my highlights of the year. I think this is a really impressive film. And I think it's another addition to a really interesting career for François Ozon. We've actually had him on the podcast before to talk about his film France, which is this lovely black and white historical melodrama, and Le Monde Double, which, Ella, you've confirmed as you speak French, I've absolutely nailed.
Absolutely. Parfait.
Yeah, thank you.
What does that mean?
It means which bit?
To dessert.
That's it.
Thanks. And that film was a kind of double identity erotic thriller. And so it's great that he then moves from that into what is easily called The French Spotlight, but it's a very different film to that. And so this is a director who really can just pick and choose a project and change his style accordingly to suit that. He's so interesting. And so I was really happy to be able to sit down and talk to him about this film. Prior to that, people might have seen Eight Women, Swimming Pool, or In the House, which is really, really good. Like, I would call that the French literary Inception. But do check that one out, particularly if you like Kristin Scott Thomas, and who doesn't? But this is a really interesting film, and I'm curious to hear what you two made of it as well. I think it makes some bold decisions, particularly in how the story is told.
Yeah, absolutely. So rather than just telling the story straightforward, it cuts to you have one character follow their short trajectory, and then maybe 40 minutes later go to the second character, and then the third character. We still cut back to those first two characters, but it is, as he says in the interview, like a relay, which is a really nice analogy for the structure of this film.
Yeah, and even when it first starts, I find with a lot of films that have very controversial subjects and, well, that stuff that's made headlines, there can be a lot of exposition that kind of just tiptoes around it for a while. Whereas this one, because of the focus that it has on the characters, is so sharp. His voiceover tells you within the first 5 minutes exactly what his problem is, what he's doing, what his mission is. And I really like how just to the point it is. There's no messing about with what's going on here and what needs to be fixed.
No, it doesn't start by heightening the stakes to kind of manipulate you into thinking about how awful that must have been. It is matter of fact about it. And I think it's really refreshing to see something of this subject matter come out like that. And it will surprise people, I think, when they learn how recent these events are. Because the film happens over a 2-year period, which is 2014 to 2016. And when the film debuted at the Berlin Film Festival this year in February, it ends with a title card about the results to a trial that would be happening in March of this year. And so it is an incredibly present film. But yeah, I really enjoyed talking to Francois about it. And here's a conversation we had a couple of weeks ago. How are you doing, Francois?
I'm fine. Happy to be in London.
Lovely. Well, I don't know if you'd be aware of this, but you are actually the first person to appear on this podcast 3 times.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so for the last 3 films.
Do you have a gift for me?
Well, I was struggling to think, what gift do you give to someone when you're talking about By the Grace of God? I think maybe it would have been easier for Le Monde Double to get a present around that.
Okay.
But we're going to talk about By the Grace of God, and it's lovely to have you with us for the...
A crucifix, maybe?
Yeah.
Yes, I would like to have a crucifix.
See, okay, next time round, whatever the fourth conversation is, I'll bring you a crucifix for
that. Okay, thank you.
So going to the new film, what's striking about it, and I'm sure what audiences will find quite shocking almost, is the fact that it's so present, that it is so... grounded in like the immediate history. I'm curious, how soon after the events that we see in the film were you involved in this project?
Actually, it was not my choice to make a film about current news. You know, I wanted first to make a film about male fragility, and I was looking for a subject, and I discovered by chance on internet the testimonies of some victims of pedophile priest, and so I decided to meet them, and they told me their story, and their story was still working, enfin, alive, because they were still fighting. And so I was maybe innocent and naive, and I said, yes, it's now, but it's a good subject for a film. So I decided to tell them story and to write a script. And I decide to keep the names of the personnel, the important characters of the story. It was maybe a mistake because it was a lot of problem, a big mess after that, because some people tried to stop the release of the film. But at the end, the film was released. And I had the feeling with today, with this period of transparency, of coming out, of Me Too, all these kind of things, it was it wouldn't be a problem, you know, to make a film about something which is happening now. But actually, it was quite difficult.
And when you're thinking of the story itself, how do you think when something is happening as you're writing it, how does that change compared to if this event happened 20 years ago?
Actually, my film is about 2014 until 2016. So it was during 2 years. And I shot the film in 2017. So I had a small distance, but I had a distance on the facts. And after, things happen after my film. And that's why at the end of the film, at the critics, I give the new information about the facts. But I wanted to focus myself on these 2 years. From the fight of Alexandre to the success of the association.
And so you mentioned you wanted to explore male fragility.
Yes.
And I found it really interesting, particularly on the first two subjects that we see, how they are not maybe traditionally the victim that we might see in film, that they are confident, they're proactive, they're not totally being defined by the actions that have been forced on them.
Yes.
Was that something that you found particularly curious about those men?
I think for each one it's different, you know, they have a different way of reaction. on the facts. I love with Alexandre the fact he was very Catholic. You know, he believes in the church, he has faith in God, in the institution. And I thought it would be interesting to begin to start the film with him, because he thinks the church will change. He thinks the cardinal will stop the priest, and he realized after 2 years. 2 years of many letters, many meetings, that nothing will change. The institution is stronger, and he decides to go to the justice, you know, and then a policeman begins an investigation, and we discover some of her victims. And I like to show this story like a relay race between different characters, and for each character, it's a new family, it's a new environment, it's a new social position, and all the reactions are different. It's very rich, actually, I think.
Yeah, I think structurally, it's really interesting. You mentioned it's like a relay race.
Yes.
Because, I mean, what are the challenges with a story like this where you it's in thirds, each one has to be almost its own contained story whilst also filling in the wider story itself and coming to a conclusion all at the same time?
Yes. It was the big challenge, you know, and my producers were a little bit nervous. They said, are you sure after 45 minutes the lead character disappear? It's not possible to have the same the three characters at the same time. I said, no, in the story, it didn't happen like that. And what I liked was this relay race, this idea. Of course, it was challenging because I didn't have in mind a film with this kind of structure. I had more in mind some series, you know. Sometimes there is one episode on one character, a second episode on another character. But in a film, I had never seen that. So it was the challenge. But I had faith in the strength of the character. You know, they are very different, and each time I have the feeling the audience can identify to the character I show.
Yeah. Another area of the film, along with the structure that I really admired, was the voiceover.
Yes.
That's these emails that are going back and forth.
Yes.
That initially, kind of just for me, of working as narration, they're guiding us along, but then you kind of get into this Kafkaesque back and forth, and then they almost become prayers in themselves, the way that they just float over the film.
Yes.
I find that quite hypnotizing.
Yes, the voices over are very important, and I could have done all the film with voiceover until the end, because internet was so important in this story, and it happened fast because internet was able to make the links between all the victims. You know, sometimes in the second part of the film, I show some meeting with all the characters. And actually, it didn't happen like that. It happened on the net. You know, the meetings were on the net. So I had all the mail of all the characters. And, I decided to, particularly with Alexandre, to use all the real emails after I decide to create some real scenes.
And I'd love to ask you about Denis Ménochet's performance, because for me, as much as I love everyone in the film, he's like my highlight there. I think maybe it's just complete.
You have to tell him.
It's just perfect casting as well, I think, because he's a big man.
Yes.
And he's so physical, and he's the opposite of what people might expect of a man who has suffered abuse.
Yes.
And I wonder if you could tell me a bit more about your work with Denis on this project.
I know Denis for a long time because we met together in the house. He had a small part in it. And I had the feeling he would be perfect for the part, but you never know. So I told him the story, and he was not crying, but he was so touched. And he said, okay, I do what you want. He was so touched by the story, like many actors, because you realize, you know, the work of acting is a work of dissociation. And you realize that child abuse are able to make a kind of dissociation too. You know, when they are raped, they don't understand what's happening to them. So they block the memory of what happened in their aid, and they decide to go on, to live like, and to go on to play like children. And actors are a little bit like that. So I realized when I was making the casting, so many actors and actresses were abused. it was a real surprise. But you can understand why they become actor, because they like to play and to escape from a reality of something they have lived when they were children or something they want to escape.
I wanted to ask about the moment that you decided to put a poster for Spotlight in the film, because I know that's obviously something that people are going to be comparing this film to, and I'm curious about that decision to actually.
Alors, it was a decision who comes from the which comes from the reality, because actually the victims told me when we go to see the inspector in his office, there was a poster of Spotlight, and they were very happy because they said that means he's on our side, and it was the reality. Because the film was just released at the moment the investigation begins, and you know, very often in France the policemen have posters of movies in, and very often movies about their work. So it was a sign for the victims that the police will help them to fight.
Yeah, it was a real surprise to see it in there.
And at the same time, for me, of course, this film was important, because when I met the victims, I realized, because they knew I was a fiction director, they were waiting for a kind of French Spotlight, you know, even if it's not the same kind of film, because Spotlight is more on the point of view of the journalist. In the case of my film, it's on the point of view of the victims.
Yeah, and
but the film was powerful, and the film changed things in America, so They had the hope that my film could change something in France too.
Yeah, let's hope so. Francois, thank you so much.
Thank
for
you to you.
Us. Cheers.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So we briefly mentioned it before hearing from Francois there. I want to go back to this, the structure of the film, because I think it is a really fascinating way to tell this story. As a piece of story structure, a way of being able to tell this totally overarching story that feels connected whilst also telling individually these stories that each have their own beginning, middle and end. It is amazing. It's not necessarily, I know he calls it a relay race, but it's like he's leaving things behind along the way that can be picked up later on. It's this wonderful thread that manages to intertwine like a braid, one might say.
Yeah, and there's a kind of structure that each sort of segment shares where, like, the character, you'll see the character in their natural environment, and then they'll discover either that this case is going on or that the priest is still working with children, and there'll be a sort of slow, like, realization that this thing is sort of bigger than just what happened to them. And so the film, it does this really, really nice way of sort of zooming in and out all the time without you feeling like it's doing it too much or hitting you over the head with how much it's doing that.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like the characters disappear once their segment is over. You can feel the weight of their actions throughout the rest of the film.
And also having this real life weight, I think with stories that you know happened in the real world, in the film, these characters, some people are renamed, but when you Google the priest, you know, everything is as it is. And having, just being so close to reality without over dramatizing it, without kind of either hiding or enhancing it, I think to have that in the film that has so many characters, because it's got the three main ones, but then I really like how you can see the whole association and all of other people who have come forward, who are helping out, people's spouses and families and all that kind of thing. And yeah, it creates this really huge picture that I then wouldn't describe as something that's trying to be epic or sweeping or melodramatic or anything like that.
Mm. Yeah, this structure allows it to be intimate, as intimate as it can be.
For a 2 hour and 20 minute film in a way.
And also, each of them had a very different experience, even though it was the same abuser and it was still a priest, but they each have a very different attitude to the Catholic Church after the abuse and everything. I think that's a really interesting thing to do. I think these films that tell these kind of stories about the Catholic Church very often fall on the Catholic Church is very, very bad, whereas this film gives you three very different attitudes towards that, which
I think
really
is
interesting
so
and
fascinating.
Really, yeah.
The questions are so open. And I must say there's one line that, if anything, for me left things too open when one of them is asked at one point, do you still believe in God? And there is this thing sometimes when very big questions are asked in film, there is a deliberate lack of answer at this point. But in a way, when I think back to it, it's quite nice to think this film is so open and, you know, it can maybe some of these men still do, some of them don't. And it's nice that there is that freedom with the truth.
Mm. And, key to getting all of these reactions that we're having to this film is the three central performances from it. And so that's Melville Popold, Denis Menochet and Swan Arlaud, who play the three men. And they're very different, very interesting performances. Mm. I spoke in the interview about Denis Menochet's performance, which I really found quite magnetic and really interesting representation of traditional masculinity. But I want to flag the other two as well. I think Swan Arlaud in the final section is perhaps the character that we might traditionally expect to have been abused.
He's the most broken character.
He's very emotional.
Yeah. And he has these like violent fits when he sort of can't handle remembering what happened to him. And even the way his, without going into detail, that the way his body has been physically changed is really quite disturbing and something that, again, these films haven't really explored before.
Yeah. And but it doesn't feel like he's like gunning for sympathy or like performance credit for this. This feels like a properly lived in thing. And as an alternate to that, Melville Popode, who plays Alexander, is very like on the straight and narrow. He's the guy that opens the film with that matter-of-fact narration.
It's very calm and very, but it doesn't feel like it's monotonous. There's something very sturdy and I don't want to say reassuring, but immediately he just inspires confidence in the way he lays everything out, and it never seems like anything is escaping from him. There's never any thoughts running away, never any words, never any actions. He's very focused, and I really appreciate that. I think it was really compelling to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think for audiences, it's really refreshing to see the characters who are living full lives, who are being proactive, who are not just completely destroyed by the actions of people before them. And I think that's something that's totally inspiring about the film. A key little moment that I really liked was when two of the characters are actually able to make quite a dark joke about their situation.
Yeah.
But clearly that is actually just, even though it's 5 seconds of the film, that's this huge sign of progression and acceptance.
And confidence.
I think it's just this really lovely character beat. And there's so many little moments like that throughout the film.
Also, these films usually, and this has been compared to Spotlight a lot, and I think Spotlight's great, I love Spotlight, but that's a film that very much focuses on the investigation and the importance of the freedom of press and things like that. And these films do tend to show these cases from the point of view of the investigator, like the journalist or the police, or even from the point of view of the abuser and try and make them the lead character. And I think it's really important that this film, front and centre, it's all about the victims.
Okay, so that is By the Grace of God, which is in cinemas, and it's on Curzon Home Cinema as well. So if you cannot make it out, you can always watch that one at home as well. And Sam, you mentioned Spotlight there. I think something like...
It's a fair comparison, completely.
I mean, the poster is in the film, as we mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
But also one for fans of films like All the President's Men.
Yeah.
I think The Report that's coming up as well. These are films about procedure, about paperwork in a way. but they handle it very well. Now it's time to move from France to the jungle of Colombia for Monos, the film that has just won the best film at the London Film Festival. And Ella, you're very excited to talk about this one.
I've been excited to talk about this film since February. So Monos has done the rounds. It went to Sundance, it went to Berlin, it landed at the London Film Festival, and it's finally coming out this week. So it is the second feature from Brazilian filmmaker Alejandro Landes. And it is set on a Colombian mountaintop where there are these eight teenagers who are basically the lowest rung of soldiers. And they have to take care of a war prisoner and a cow. And they aren't really told what's going on too much, but they're just under strict instructions from a man called the Messenger, who is essentially organising this mini army to do what they have to do. It's this boot camp. It's war. It's terrifying. They're in the jungle. It's Monos.
Yeah, and you said they're not told what to do. We are not allowed that privilege either. And this is quite an experience to go into blind, which every audience member in a way will.
Yeah, you're given absolutely zero context for this film. You have no idea where these children come from, what this sort of paramilitary group they're involved stands for, like why they're doing this, what the hell's going on. And the film's all the better for that.
Yeah. It starts in the ways that one might expect of a military film. You've got people standing and shouting and barking orders and doing exercise and doing that. But maybe 5-10 minutes in, you start to see stuff like, there's quite a bit of kissing here and people just kind of firing guns into the night. And, these are just 15-year-olds who are somehow on the top of a mountain in Colombia where there's some amazing kind of old brutal concrete structure that they're living underneath, and they're tasked with protecting a cow.
It's chaos.
It's And what's really incredible, I thought, is that you have this thing of like, okay, you realize very quickly these are teenage soldiers and they are very hormonal. They are very awkward with each other the way teenagers are. They're very horny. They are... You know, they're shy to each other. They're proper teenagers, but then they're also can be very intimidating as soldiers. It's not a comedy. It's not a joke that these teenagers are soldiers. They are proper soldiers that go to war, that have battles, and I think it's a really interesting balance that the film strikes up, that you do feel intimidated by these kids essentially.
Yeah, it's such a weird film. But,
but Alejandro Landes was saying that the starting point for this film wasn't the war, it was the teenagers and finding a way to kind of air the conflict and the frustration and all of these, you know, really strong emotions and impulses that they have. Mm. And to have them at war with themselves first, and then you place that against the conflict of, in this case, the civil war in Colombia.
Yeah, and what you mentioned there, Sam, about that they are intense as people, and they take themselves very seriously. And in a way, going back to this idea of the misunderstood teenager that he's trying to make the film about, I think maybe it's trying to instill in that us the feeling that a teenager would want, that their beliefs are real, that they
and
are intense,
important.
And you must take
them
seriously.
And their confusion as well, because, again, the lack of exposition and the violence and everything they have to deal with, it kind of puts us all in the same boat of wondering, like, why are they there and why is, you know, everyone trapped and is everyone a prisoner as well?
Mm. It does a really good job at kind of, I don't want to say welcoming us into this world, but...
Throwing us.
Yeah, I mean, we are dropped into it, but we're given... quite a solid solid landing. But from there, like you've got Jasper Wolf is the cinematographer there, and who you get such an interesting sense of space to the two different locations here. So you've got Chingaza Paramo in Cundinamarca, which is the top of this mountain, and that's where the first half of the film really takes place. And then the jungle of the Samania River Canyon as well, the second half of the film. So you've got like bright air, clouds, blue skies, intense fire, clear faces.
Like neon green of the forest.
And it just changes to that. And both of these places are so remote that they've never been filmed in before.
Wow. That's incredible.
And so it does just mean that each shot, obviously, you would never be able to tell, like, one blade of grass in this jungle to another blade of grass in that jungle. But overall, that effort of going to capture images that no one has done before, regardless of, it doesn't matter if we know where it is, it does feel like we're getting something totally fresh.
Mm-hmm. And there's a real Herzog-y feel to this as well, I thought. This idea of the sort of overwhelming nature of the natural world around you completely changing how you act and, you know, making you, the chaos around you infect into your brain and... These teenagers go wilder and wilder, and there's scenes toward the end where they're covered in this like bizarre body paint that just further and further removes them from what you think you know about teenagers and people, and it makes them just blend into what's been surrounding them.
Well, and I think it's, you can look at that imagery right from the start, and you can see that this is nature just consuming humanity, trying to put its foothold on the jungle. Like that, they built this building at the top of the mountain, but it's desolate, it's falling apart. This is what happens when you try and force humanity onto this world, and it just kicks you out.
It's fighting back. Yeah. There's also, it inspired the same feelings that The Revenant inspired in me, where you can really feel like the dirt under your fingernails. And this, obviously, as you said, the scenery looks beautiful, but it doesn't look that welcoming. You wouldn't necessarily want to be there. It looks, you know, it's such a harsh environment. And even though you're at the top of this beautiful mountain, it's so like everything's really moist and wet and grimy.
And going back to the kind of influences on this, I think with kids stuck in the woods and even a pig's head on a stick at one point, anyone who studied Lord of the Flies at GCSE, I'm sure, is going to have a nostalgia trip going into this one.
Yeah, it's front and center of the film. You know, these sort of represent the whole of society in eight children. You know, that's very Lord of the Flies. And I think this film wears that on its sleeve.
It definitely, it seems like something that the filmmaker, he's always mentioned it as well when talking about his influences. But it's interesting when the other film that he also mentions is Apocalypse Now. And that's when you see really how seriously he takes this war. And when you see it, it doesn't seem like it's teenagers trying to kind of try and be adults and try and catch up and become violent. They're very convincing in what they're doing. And I think some of that comes from the fact that for the vast majority of them, they're not actors. This is their first role, as much the eight teenagers as the chap who plays the messenger. He was trained within this army, and this is his first acting role in this, and they're all just astonishing. And the fun fact of all of the children, the most famous one, some could say, is Moises Arias, who I will say that people might know from Hannah Montana, in which for many years he played the character called Rico.
I did not know this, but Sam and I, you and I had the same experience of watching this kid and thinking, who is this kid?
Yes, it was driving me insane.
Yeah.
And then you told me today he is it Biagio from The Kings of Summer, which is a really great film. And actually has a lot in common with this in a way. They're both this, again, very Lord of the Flies influenced story of sort of teenagers going off into the woods and trying to create their own society and have their own sort of social hierarchy within that.
Yeah, I mean, but that
on a far less intense level.
That is like a lovely, warm, gentle one compared to this. Absolutely. Just want to finally mention Mika Levy's score for this. We always love to see her working, and I don't think she's put out a bad score yet, but this, for me, is going to join the ranks of Under the Skin and Jackie. Really fantastic atmospheric work. And it manages to combine the kind of epic scale of the landscape with the innocence that's battling in between these kids. You've got like lovely whistle, glockenspiel, very innocent sounds, but they're meshing with these large, ominous whooshes. It's really great stuff. And that is Monos, which is in cinemas. I would recommend getting that to that one. Watch it loud, watch it big. Really get yourself, as you say, Sam, covered in mud.
Yeah, throw yourself in.
All right. If you don't fancy going to the cinema, you can always watch something on demand. Over on Home Cinema, we've added Steve James' Hoop Dreams.
Yeah, 25th anniversary of Hoop Dreams. So this film is widely considered one of the greatest documentaries of all time, looking at the lives of these sort of inner city African-American inner city kids trying to become basketball players. Hugely influential, really lovely film. One of Roger Ebert's favourites as well. And it's the same director of Life Itself, the documentary about Roger Ebert.
Yeah, that is a very cryy double bill.
Yes, definitely.
Watch those two together. And we also want to mention Non-Fiction, which we put out last week. That's on Curzon Home Cinema. And I actually had a nice chat with Andrew Bannister, who designed the poster for Non-Fiction, if you've seen that dotted around. So there's an article up on the Curzon blog, and you can read all about the discarded designs and font choices and all the things that interesting people like me find interesting.
Sure.
Thanks.
Yeah,
okay.
Thanks
for that.
Vote of confidence.
Kills some time.
Yeah. Thanks. That's it. Put that on the poster. Put that on the poster for the poster article. It kills some time. All right. If you've got any thoughts on By the Grace of God or Monash, you can let us know by tweeting at Curzon Cinemas or all of us. We're there. I'm there at Jake H. Cunningham. Sam, you're on Twitter as
Sam Howlett_1.
Ella.
Ella_Kemp.
Brilliant. And if it's your first time listening to the show and you've enjoyed it, do subscribe. You can do so on iTunes, Acast, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. But until then, I think that's about it. So let's go around the table. We don't do that. Sam, yes. It's bye from you.
It's goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from Ella.
Bye.
That's goodbye from me.
That was nice.
Bye-bye.
Great.
Lovely.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.